Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My special guest, I haven't seen him in so long down here. We've seen him elsewhere. Photographer Stephen Dorado, professor of practice in photography at Clark University. But we're here talking about an amazing project. I'm not quite sure about the terms I should use to describe this project. It was wrenching for me to watch this documentary on this. The book is called With Dad. It's a collection of your photography. Beautifully done, by the way. Beautifully.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Let's talk about who your dad was initially, because I never knew all that about your dad. And the film really introduced me to your dad and what a cool guy he was.
So, okay, we have to talk about these two different things kind of separate for a second, and maybe by next year they'll come together. Mark, what you're talking about. First of all, thank you so much for being on. I've been doing this since 1984.
I know. With you. I know when you've been doing this. But this project has also been going on for a very long time.
I had to take the timeline, which I have right in front of me, and I had to like circle certain dates because I don't even remember any more of the specifics. So let's back up. So, Gene A. Dorado, my father, who was an artist for the state of Massachusetts. He was a Department of Public Works guy that went to work, 9 to 5, 5 days a week in Nashua Street in Boston.
And chances are you probably saw some of his work.
Anybody listening to this that's over, I would say, 45 maybe at this point, they grew up in anywhere in Massachusetts and picked up a Boston Globe or a Worcester Telegram and Gazette or a Cape Cod Times or whatever. And they saw illustrations by an artist of a new municipal building or a new highway at 495, for example, on 290.
Like you would see these in the paper.
Yeah, you would see these. And if you looked real close, it was artist rendering Gene A. Dorado.
And he was, first of all, he's a dapper guy.
My father was, you described it exactly. My father was a dapper. He tried to get me to dress up and tailor clothes. That was not happening.
And he's the guy that got you interested in photography.
I think
he was.
My father really taught me about art at a very young age.
And he didn't want you to do photography.
The thing is that he wanted me an architect or a realist illustrator, something that makes money.
But,
and he always had a camera.
Stephen took the photographs of people at the dinner table.
Look, everything that I do is back to my family. My father, every holiday, photographed, all accounted for. Everybody come in close. Everybody look towards the camera. Everybody say, cheese. And he would snap away. And I found that to be absolutely fascinating.
You're still doing it.
I'm doing it on a kind of academic level, but I'm still
doing it. No, you're not. You're doing it in the Dorado way. But anyways, you have this wonderful father. And I'm going to cut a lot of stories short. You start noticing changes in your father. And
yes,
there's a documentary film about this photography project done by Soren Sorensen of Clark University.
Yeah.
And as you say in that, you start noticing he doesn't seem to be taking as much interest in what you're doing.
By the time he was in his late 50s and early 60s, still working, looking forward to retiring by the time he was 62, I noticed that, by the way, I didn't live far from my parents. I saw him at least once every 10 days, once a week. And, we would sit around, we'd watch movies together on his TV or programs, and we'd talk about it. But I noticed by the time he was in the late 50s, he was more interested in napping in front of the TV after hours.
Was that alarming to you?
Yeah, it was, because we were always engaged in great conversation before that. And he was also very busy working in his home studio. He had a studio set up in his house to make art for himself, which eventually was going to take over and become his art once he retires. And I was really worried about this kind of disengagement in his 50s.
Did you start to suspect that something was going on?
Yeah, I actually said to him, because, look, all artists are depressed, and don't tell me that we're not. I mean, that's how we function. It gives me the energy in some ways.
So did you think maybe he was just depressed?
Yeah, and I said to him, I said, Dad, I have a history of depression, and I did everything in my powers to stay active, and this is why I make my art nonstop, because of fear of stopping and never doing it again.
Huh.
And I have a fear.
That I never knew, Stephen.
Yeah. No, I'm one of those rare extroverts.
I got to keep doing it, otherwise it's going to go away.
Totally.
I get that.
Yeah, if you stop running, you're never going to run again.
That's right.
And so, but I was very aware of it, and one of the many reasons why I continue making my art nonstop, to keep pushing forward, to stay young in many ways. So, I'm pushing this onto my father. Dad, maybe you're a little depressed. Maybe that explains where I'm coming from. Nah, I'm not depressed. I'm like, well, what's going on? Well, when I retire, I'm going to go back to making my art. Dad, you need to do it now. There needs to be a period where you go through the transition and the pain of where you're making work for yourself, which is the most frightening thing to do compared to doing it by a 9-to-5 job.
Now, we're going to have to encapsulate this in order to cut it down to a half hour, but what starts is a long-term project of you, of photo documenting your father, often you with your father and other people, as he goes through just the heartbreaking two strokes and then Alzheimer's.
So
You follow it right to literally the very end.
The very, very end. Last, actually, I photographed him up to the day before he passed away. But because I was working on this for a long time, 22 years at least, maybe probably longer, but 22 years where I actually made a commitment, where I made appointments with my father.
That's right.
And this is a very important part of this. So I document everything in my life. I photograph my family, my friends. That's what I do. I live with communities. I identify to them, and I photograph them over and over and over to the point that I'm invisible so that I can make the kinds of intimate photos that I'm known for. So in the case of my father, yes, I was photographing him on occasion with family and events, but I was so worried about him and his depression that I said, "Dad, I'm going to start making appointments with you and come and photograph you." It doesn't necessarily a weekly, might be monthly, but when we can be together and alone. He said, "Why are you doing this? You've always photographed me." "No, I didn't make it. I need to make it my job to come and photograph just you so we can spend time alone together." And he's like, "Fine, whatever."
Now, so, people who don't know you, your camera is huge.
I use this enormous box camera. It takes sheets
There's
of
nothing
analog
subtle about
film.
Your camera.
I still use it to this day. I didn't change anything in my style over that period of time. Black and white film, I'm actually colorblind. Not severe, but enough that encourages me to keep shooting in black and white.
So, again, I want to hit a lot of points about this project. So you start regularly photographing your father through this very long, tortured decline.
Yes.
And this series of photographs, which is with Dad, which is what the book is about, is one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. It, as a person who didn't know your father, first of all, I start to get to know your father, and then he's taken away from me.
From all of us. This is one of the sweetest people on this earth, and you know, a lot of my makeup, my genetic makeup, is my father. So I look in the mirror and I see him every day, and you know, and forever I'm indebted to him. I'm also a lot of my mother. Which is the great connections that she has verbally. My father was all heart and soul. And my mother, Mom, if you're listening to this, you're all heart and soul too.
But my mother is a
real character. And I have some of that gift.
It's amazing to watch your mother through this process too.
So this is, this is in
Storm's. This becomes
film.
A family project.
As well as in the
book. It's a family project because your brother participates.
Yeah.
And your sister's there.
My sister who's also. I'm very, very, very fortunate to have a very loving and understanding family. You have to all understand that here I am photographing our father, my mother's husband, with this big box camera, stopping everybody for a moment to move a hand or change the light to create a narrative in one single photograph. And everybody is so accommodating. And then when my father was identified with Alzheimer's, literally in the hospital after a stroke, that the family still, without question and with devout love, allowed me to continue this right up to his death.
As did the people in the nursing home.
I became an artist, unofficial
you had
artist
to have, residence. You had to have, right. I became, you had a conversation with them.
I mean, I walked in when my father was admitted.
And so for people who were immediately, isn't this a really invasive and intrusive on a person who's going through a bad thing? Seeing both the film and the book, this becomes a personal testimony to your relationship with your father. And for all those people who've ever gone through the loss of a loved one through the cruelty of Alzheimer's, this is like the most amazing thing to see.
Yeah, again, who knew back when I thought he was depressed that this was going to happen? I just thought I was actually working stuff out through him about me. How about that? And then when I realized later in years that he had this thing called Alzheimer's, which was really kind of new back then.
Right, yeah.
You know, in the 90s. And, you know, he even said at one point, "Hey, I think I have this thing called Alzheimer's. How long do you think I'll have it?" And again, that was just a crushing moment. So all along the way documenting my father, I thought I was doing it about depression. And then when I realized it was Alzheimer's, it was too late to stop the camera from running. And I realized that now I'm doing a service to all that are going to deal with Alzheimer's. And
well, you're capturing the last moment because the cruelty of Alzheimer's is the person itself evaporates slowly.
In this case, 22 years.
And so you're capturing the every last possible recognizable moment of who he was.
Yeah.
Both for yourself and now you're sharing it with the public. Yeah. And that's what I got out of when I watched the documentary film is you get, first of all, You're always touching your father.
There's not much else other than the tone of the voice, which he reacted to, a physical touching, holding, holding his face, you know, caressing his hair, you know, combing his hair with my fingers. That tactile connection is huge in the case of.
He's still there.
And, you know, I mean, and again, it's hard to keep this linear, but in his advancing stages of Alzheimer's, I remember walking into the nursing home one day. And by the way, this is really weird. I loved going into the nursing home. I loved being in there around all of these people at the other end of life. And there was one particular day, months before my father passed away, that I walked into the recreational room. And I all of a sudden, I felt not my father in his body, that I felt him kind of around his body. And then it woke me up where I felt that with a number of other of the residents. And I asked one of the assisting nurses, I think it was Elizabeth. I said, Elizabeth, I have to ask you something. My father's here, but he's not in his body. And she looked at me with a kind of a deadpan look and said, yeah, what are you telling me that's new? And I'm like, wait a minute, is this like common fact? She's like, when people come to the end of their lives, their soul, spirit, whatever you want to call it, not necessarily is nestled within the corporal body that it tends to hover. And then she said to me, did you know the same is with brand new babies the first couple of weeks? And I'm like, I'm green here. I'm learning this by observing and being available. So I just learned so much by being in that nursing home day after day, week after week.
There were certain milestones of his decline that you talk about in the film and are documented in your photographs.
Yes.
One of the most touching and I don't know what the right term is. It was unnerving to me. You're watching your father, and every 20 minutes he's getting up and going to the bathroom.
This is another one of those hurdles that I had to jump. So there's a point where he's still at home. And my mother's blood pressure it's a 25-hour day. We all know about this. It's just a nonstop effort to keep a loved one safe, really, for not going outside in the middle of the wintertime or getting lost in their own house. And so my brother and sister, we all live within miles apart, gave my mother a time off. We call it a daddy sitting. So I would take a weekend off. My sister would take it with my brother. So we rotate this back and forth. And so one weekend, I'm there with my father. You know, you cook for him. I would walk him around the yard. Little things. Turn on the TV. He wasn't really watching it, but he would be there in front of the TV. And he'd get up. He'd get up every 45 minutes or so, less than an hour, and go into the bathroom. And I thought, okay, so what's going on here? I don't hear the toilet flush. I don't hear the water running in the sink. And I'd say, hey, Dad, you know, next time you go in the bathroom, I'm going to follow you in with my camera. This is, again, the luxury of working all the time. And
Is he knowing who you are at this point?
He knows that I'm somebody friendly. Okay. I don't think he even has a name to me anymore. You know all this. Anybody with any kind of dementia or Alzheimer's, they kind of BS things.
That's right.
They kind of just smile a lot.
They try to make it work.
Yeah, they try to make it work. So yeah. I'm getting that, and I understand that. So I follow him into the bathroom, and he walks up to the mirror just looking at it. And I said to myself, oh, my God. He is trying to hold on to his identity, self. And I said, Dad, I'm going to make a photo of you looking in the mirror. And he's like, okay. Again, very simple responses. So again, with this enormous camera, you have to drop the tripod legs. You have to raise the camera up at a certain level. I usually do it at my height, 5'7". So it's a first-person point of view. That's very important in the narratives. And then, Dad, look in the mirror. Let me focus on you in the mirror. All right, Dad, you know the game. On the count of three, you have to stay still. Look at the mirror. Here we go. 1, 2... And I go to hit the shutter on 3, and he turns quickly and looks right at me in the camera and smiles. And I've never seen anything like this before. And I said, Dad, what are you doing? You're looking at the camera. And he looked at me, and he growled, and he said, the man in the mirror is looking at you. And this was a point that my heart sunk so deep. And I realized at that point, I'm so far off and how far out there he is that he doesn't even recognize the person in the mirror. And I stopped. And I thought, do I end this project right now? Is it private from not this point on? Do I need to tell this story? Is it abuse towards my father? Because this is a real ethical, moral issue at this point. You know, am I exploiting him for the sake of making art? Wait a minute, Stephen, you're your father's son. This is about Alzheimer's. This is for lives to come after we're long gone. But I then looked at Dad and I said, what do we think about the man in the mirror? And he said, he's a good man. And I said, he is an amazing man and I love this person. I'm paraphrasing. I've said this so many times now, but you get the point. We should both look at the man in the mirror. And he turned and I made my photo. But wow, what a moment. What a moment. And I had a few before that. And that's it. That's the story, that one photo of looking in the mirror. And in the nursing home, there were a couple moments, but nothing like that. That one there, I still carry in my
heart. It was at that moment that the viewer and the person who's looking at that photograph or that section of the documentary, the first thing you try to do is, I want to imagine what it's like to be him. What is he going through internally to just to be able to experience that for a second or two, to understand how alone that is.
There's these stages that we all know about.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, one is just forgetfulness, which you and I are both in that
stage. Yeah, I know.
Because I forget people's names, you know,
Yeah, it's
but I go, wait a minute. I was 12 when I was forgetting names. So, you know, the thing about Alzheimer's.
But this is a different level.
No, it's a different level. And you go through, you know, we all know that you go through an angry stage. He went through the angry stage, paranoia stage. He went through all of that. And denial. And, you know, he'd go on a 10-minute trip, something he's been doing day in and day out with his car, but it would take him 2 hours to come back. The car would be a little beat up, a little scratched. And he'd be very kind of disoriented and not angry, but scared. So you watched him. I watched him. We all watched him go through these stages. And then there's a point where there's this enormous amount. Who am I? I'm this artist who just records what's in front of me, not digesting it to the fullest. It takes really somebody in the business to really give you an analysis. But there's anxiety and a kind of a disconnect that, like you just said, must be the most lonely thing on this earth, to have all of the things that are familiar to you become foreign.
We can't imagine it.
I can't. And that's why, back to you mentioned earlier, the touching and the holding being so important.
You're still physically there.
Yeah, he's not pushing me away. He's allowing me to do this. And so it was the only thing I could give him. I know in forward in the nursing home that, you know, I actually, because my father was born in Marlborough, Massachusetts. My father died in Marlborough, Massachusetts. And the nursing home was in Marlborough, Massachusetts. And I saw a number of my high school acquaintances there with their parents. And, you know, they didn't come in with the security of a camera, a purpose. But I was there shooting a job, right? Something that I went to work. I went to the nursing home 2 or 3 days a week.
This
I was
not going a to job.
Well,
Steven,
you know,
it's
no,
a
you
mission.
Know,
it's
a
mission. Man.
It's a construct.
You're telling yourself it's a job.
I'm telling myself
it's a mission. It's
I was not taking days off.
No, you weren't.
So I would go in there and
you're not punching a clock,
no.
man.
But I would see, you know, classmates who are, you know, in therapy and depression because of their mother or father.
Right.
And I would pull them aside and I would say, live the moment.
Yeah.
I said, don't give them the old stories about what they did 30 years ago. That's over with. You got to live in the now. And I said, look, it's a nice sunny day. Bring your mother up to the window. Hold her head up to the sky, to the sun. Feel the heat on their face. Tell them about the heat on their face. In the spring, I would bring my father out in his wheelchair. And I would have him listen to the birds, and I would actually pull on his earlobes so that a dad listened, and he would then raise his head and listen to the bird. Now, I don't know if that's really happening, but something is happening.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Because it matters to what's happening to you.
Right, exactly. So I felt I had purpose, and I was giving him something.
That's right.
Like this. My brother and sister, my sister was fine. My brother, it was very difficult for my sister to go. He's the baby, by the way, right? The baby is the toughest.
But he helped you out in this
The
project.
Thing is that at one point, his name is Chris. Chris, you need to come with me to the nursing home. You know, I just don't. It's so difficult to see Dad in the state. And I said to him, look, I have a movie camera that I bought for another project and I'm not using it. I'm going to give you purpose. I'm going to give you a job. Film me in the nursing home. And he's like, okay. And it got so good, by the way, that he was meeting me there before I arrived.
What was interesting about the fact that you did that, I think one of the problems when one of our loved ones is going through a situation like this is it becomes so scary to us personally that we don't want to see them.
Right.
And so to overcome that.
Yeah.
You've given him this project.
I gave
project.
Him like also, a, I mean, you know.
So he's got another way to get in there. And then once you get used to it, you know, you get used to it through that project.
Yeah, no, he, like I said, he would be there waiting for me to pull in the parking lot to film me setting up my camera equipment in the back of the car and walking into the nursing
home. I want you to talk to me about the photograph that's on the cover of With Dad, because I'll tell you my reaction to it, knowing the whole project. If I was to just see that, I have no idea what's happening to it. To me, he seems like a totally aware older person.
Yeah, that's good. That's what the intention
was. Like,
what
stage is that?
So what we're seeing on the cover of With Dad, by the way, published by Davis Publications.
Which beautifully done.
Incredibly done, which is done right here in Worcester in the same building.
In the same building that we're talking.
Yeah, and Julian, who is the who's the publisher, this is their flagship book. They're famous for textbooks. This is their first
art book.
So this is a huge moment in all of our history.
And it's beautifully done.
It's incredible. And
but talk to me about this photograph.
So on the cover of this book is a close-up shot, a head and shoulder shot.
Beautifully
my
lit.
Father lit by a crack of sunlight coming through a curtain.
Lighting is huge in your photographs.
Lighting to me
is... And this reminds me of some of your Martha's Vineyards photographs with that kind of dramatic lighting. And there's a look in his face. He sort of seems like a sly guy. He's got a secret.
There's eyes that are open, but you know the ears are doing more of the work.
Yep.
It's like when somebody pauses, like everybody listening to this program, you're not looking, you're listening. And so you know that from just how we read bodies, that he's sitting there, he's open-faced, like there's nothing, there's no frown, there's nothing that's protecting him, and he's very open. And then there's this beautiful shaft of light that is just raking across his face. And it was the last time that I felt that he recognized me as his son. It was just this moment, right? And so I knew I had to make it right then and there, this particular kind of portrait that was, by the way, just a tiniest bit of a line of focus is running through his eyes and his nose and his mouth. And everything else just dissipates into a softness. And again, you know, very aware of the technique of the medium, really applied that to all my photography. But that's what the cover is. So it's very inviting. It's inviting you to come in to see or to listen. And then the story begins. And the book is in chronological order. It starts off with my father and family in a healthy state. And we carry it all the way through. And by the way, it ends in what I call a postscript of my 87-year-old healthy mother who came back to live the rest of her life in Marlborough, Massachusetts, because she was living in Florida before this. But you know those doctors down there?
They're no good.
They could kill you.
They're no good.
They could kill you.
Your mother, there's pictures with your mother with your dad that are just so precious.
Yes.
They're just amazing. There are times she would dress up to meet your dad, even though it didn't matter at that point.
No, that one is expressed more in the movie than in the book. Where she would come home from Florida after a 6-month hiatus and a 7-month, and she would, I'd go to pick her up, and the nursing home was only a few miles away from her house, and she would, you know, doll up just a little bit more because she's going to go see.
That's
you know,
so great.
Her, the one that she loved all her adult life, the one that she married. And it mattered to her. I don't think it mattered to him, but it mattered to her. And a little nervousness, almost like a date, going on a date. It was so cute to see. It was just adorable to see that we all lock into this. Yeah.
How did your mother do through this whole thing? It must have been horrible.
You know,
has she opened up to you, or is she keeping that private?
She,
On the brave face for the family?
You know, he's been gone since 2009. It took this long to really digest what this is about. And we still talk about this to this day. And all of us try to rationalize things. And so she talks about, you know, your father probably had Alzheimer's since he was 35. Why do you think that, Mom? You remember that argument that was like totally foolish? And I'm like, yeah, that was Alzheimer's, you know. I'm like, okay, whatever. So
you win the argument, Mom.
So, you know, in the advancing stages, Mom, forgive me to say this on air, but I'll never forget this. So Dad is not in a nursing home yet, but he's very simple. He's like about a 4 or 5-year-old. So and my mother said, you know, I've never been so happy. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, I tell your father to eat.
He eats.
I tell your father to go to bed. He goes to bed. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is just amazing. I will never forget that. So I think that was her way of rationalizing something that was not controlled. Of course,
but also making it palatable to the rest of the family. She's telling you she's okay.
Said she's going to survive this. You know, her blood pressure was like 200 over 115. I'm not kidding. And so that's why the weekends were involved later on with my brother and sister, because you just didn't know.
How are your brother and sister doing?
My sister, it's tough on my sister. It's always been tough on my sister. She's been incredibly close to our father. He truly was her sole mentor in life. And to this day, I just gave her a copy of this book. By the way, that just came out in the last couple of days. And there will be a website set up by Davis.
Okay.
Momentarily, but maybe by the time this even
And that's airs. Where people need to go to get a copy of the book.
I think they can buy directly through Davis. I think that they're going to sell these primarily through their website. They think it's going to sell... I don't know, like, you know, it's going to sell off. We'll see. That would be incredible. So back to my sister, even seeing this book, seeing the film, she cried and cried and cried. But also, you know, it just brings it all back. But it's also a testimony to the family, to the love of the Dorado family. And she's very, we're all very proud of that. We're very, very, very proud of that. And the same with my brother. Absolutely, we're all proud of this. We did this together.
We just have like 2 minutes left. And mm-hmm. I just want to say what comes out in the film, and there's a photograph of this, the last photograph. The last day, his kidneys are failing.
Yeah.
And he could linger on for a week or so. And you had to have a conversation with right. him, which it was okay to let go.
You know, I get in there on a Thursday night and December 10th. And the nurses are like, he's having the beginnings of renal failure. He's around for 2 weeks.
But he's going to be around for a week.
Yeah, at least a couple of weeks. Call your mother right now. Get her back. Get her back from Florida. So we call my mother that night, and she is en route. And it's now the next day, which is a Friday morning. And I walked in there. And by the way, I vowed not to photograph him the last day of his life. I felt the story is ending now, not what we all know is going to happen. So I walk in on a Friday morning, and I took one look at him, and I said, oh, my God. He is suffering so much. And I put my hand on my father's head and said, Dad, you need to leave now, today. You're not waiting 2 weeks. And so I called my brother up and I called my sister to leave work and come into the nursing home. And they were there within an hour. And I said, Chris, tell Dad to go. What do you mean tell Dad to
go? Have the family tell him it's okay to leave.
Yeah, it's okay. Gina, tell Dad to go. Well, Mom's en route to Florida. Tell him to go right now. Tell him that Mom loves him. And so it took my sister to say to him, Dad, it's okay. Well, tell Mom you love her. It's time for you to go. And Dad, you need to go on to bigger and better things. This body has failed you, and you're a much better person than what the body has done to you. And aside of a weird jokey thing that I said, which is unexplainable.
That's in the film. It's in the film. Very Harry Houdini reference. Harry Houdini failed us.
Yes, Harry Houdini failed us, Dad. Come back and mess with us.
And he does.
And he does many times over the next couple of weeks, to the point that when my sister called me up crying and saying, tell Dad to stop it.
Stephen, we're all out of time. My guest tonight has been Stephen Dorado, photographer, professor of practice in photography at Clark University. And we've been talking about his brand new book, a collection of photographs called With Dad, an amazing documentary series that is heart-wrenching, touching, and actually beautiful, too. It's really, really beautiful. It's a great story of family also. Stephen, it's always a pleasure talking to you.
My honor.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.